Welcome to Freedom Friday. It's your girl, Queen Sunny Honey. And today is a great edition on the Caribbean Radio Show. Yes, we are the Knowledge Station. Kicking off Black History Month, I gotta tell you, we're going back to our very roots. I'm taking you all the way back home with me. I'm taking you to a mystery guest I've been talking about and dropping hints all week long. Yes, who was the youngest person in my age bracket to get that highest education, you know, going up there for that doctorate? Who is the serial entrepreneur from my hashtag goals squad growing up? Who is the phenomenal mother and educator to many, many, many? Guys, stay tuned, because on this Freedom Friday, I got something really, really good for you. Are you into STEM? Science, technology, engineering, and math. Have you exposed your children to the other arts behind just going for the fine arts education? No shade to my own degree. Well, today I want to present to you a wonderful sister. I'm telling you, dynamic, who actually in the pre-STEM days came out and used STEAM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and brought it to the community of South Carolina. I would like to present to you all, Dr. Juanique. Are you with us?
I am here. Thank you for having me on. I am so happy that you selected me. This is giving me honor. And many blessings. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Let's go all the way back. Tell the people, how far do we go back?
We go all the way back to sucking Hasty Fires. That's right. We were in preschool all the way up to fifth grade, all the way up to eighth grade, all the way up to high school, and we were college roommates.
That's right. And you went off into this world and we've come full circle to you birthing. What happened on the day? Tell everybody. What happened the day you gave birth to my nephew?
Well, I was in Greensboro, North Carolina, and I just gave birth to Daniel Jacob Michael Watts. He's also an author. And 30 minutes later, I got a phone call from a very good friend, a sister, a diva, a wonderful person. And it was a shock, because we haven't spoken in like 2 or 3 years. And that was the first voice that I heard from back home congratulating me. And I was like, how did you know I had a baby? So it was Queen Sunny who called me, and I'm so grateful for that day.
Yes. We talk about the synchronicity and just being connected. I want to just acknowledge that you have always been a role model to me growing up. You came from a background with singing, and, you know, one of the secrets I wanted to share with you is my very first book is truly inspired by your mother, because there was just something that I struggled with growing up when it came to, you know, everyone has their thing, and I had your mom in the community as that pillar, and I remember my father would go and to the business, and he would frequent, because, you know, my dad wore suits every day, and he would always just having you like me, like family, like a sister, you know. And when I wrote the book To Speak My Truth, it was in that not only have you been a gift to me and a role model, but certainly your mom has been. So everybody out there, you got to catch that Not by the Hair by Sunita Shannon.
She would often tell me, you know, you might want to encourage me to cut my hair or what have you, but guess what? When the men come into my job, they love rubbing my arm. and like she's my favorite, and they just love the woman that I am. And I was like, how could that be? But I promise you, I saw it, and my daddy stayed with her for almost 30, 40 years. So apparently he loves something about that flaw.
Yes. Beauty. So beautiful to me growing up, and to allow me to, you know, look at myself in the mirror differently, because she would truly look into my eyes like a mama eagle, like, girl, don't you ever, you know, you better don't, you better do. And I appreciate that wisdom in what they call the Sankofa, turn and look back, how in, you know, what we do as women to reach out and extend that love. So let's go down this road to doctorate. What did you do when you went off to college? Tell us, what did you pursue and where did you go?
Oh my gosh, now I must give honor to my flaw, to the very thing that people would probably encourage me not to say. But I actually graduated out of high school with a 1.9 GPA. And they told me I would never go to college because, you know, the area that we're actually from, they didn't really have so much high hopes for girls in that neighborhood. You know, sometimes the people who were better, so-called better than us, would say, you know, we were only good for laying on our backs. That might be true because I do have some testimonies in terms of kids, but I also have intellect. And that's one of the things that people fail to see at that particular time. And so I always had a passion for education, but I can honestly say because I had a 1.9 GPA, but also had a gold, that I actually wrote down in my senior book, and I still have it, that I was going to get a doctorate one day. But I thought it was going to be in music education because I love music. And everybody told me, you couldn't, you grew up poor, you're on the wrong side of the tracks, so or what have you. But because of my faith in God and my belief is that if he owns everything or she owns anything, no matter how you believe or the universe, and I'm an heir, I have a right to it. You know, the only thing I got to do is really ask, seek, and knock. And so, you know, I went to Benedict College. They let me in with $35. That's right, y'all. I had $35 to my name because I think 2 weeks before I went to go sing at Carnegie Hall. And I was actually on the sidelines of the Today Show when Evander Holyfield bit Mike Tyson's ear. And then I came back and I only had $35. And so God gave me wisdom to know, and he told me to say this phrase, there's a seat with my name on it to anybody else who wanted to send me home because I had no money. And my mom, at the time, she had poor credit. And so I would tell people at Benedict College, God said that there's a seat with my name on it. And they just kept letting me proceed, and I really had no money. And then when I got there, I met a gentleman who needed to have his cover letter and his resume written, and I had to buy a book. It was $200. So what I did was I charged him $199 so I could get my books. And then from that point on, I used to eat hot sauce sandwiches. You remember those things?
Okay.
Remember that?
Yes, ma'am.
And so Dr. Bird, Dr. Alma Bird, she was in the House of Representatives, and she took me under her wing, and she started the National Council of Negro Women, Benedict Bird section at Benedict College, and I was part of that public relations squad, or coordinator, public relations coordinator. And even when I wanted to go astray or what have you, Dr. Bird would just come and knock on the door. I remember one day I was at the wrong place, and she came knocking on my door. It was late at night, and she couldn't get in contact with me because at that time we had pagers or beepers, and so I was on the other side of town. Don't you know Dr. Bird called all my relatives who I did not even know, and something I didn't know, to find out where I was at and to tell them that I was missing in action, and she had to go find me. And then we had a conversation, and then she started letting me work on her computer and doing a lot of graphic artwork for her. And then she sent me to my mentor that I currently have, you know, Miss Kat from K Cat's Barber that's at 1209 Landon Street in Columbia, South Carolina. Go there. And I apologize, I'm getting a call. Apologize for that. And so, from that moment, and she just, you know, kept up with me. I met her. She was my world literature teacher, and she would always say, "There's a method to my madness." And if you don't like it, she would give out her number. And don't you know, even though she's deceased, I still remember her telephone number. And she would encourage us. And she said, "You know what? You look like a woman who's getting ready to get married." And so she encouraged me to go overseas. So I went overseas to meet my former husband's family. Then she kept up with me when I had my son. She actually sent me a gift package. And, you know, she just kind of guided my path. I would love to say that even though she's deceased, she still guided my path along the way because she's opened up a lot of doors for me. And then I went to North Carolina A&T, and I'm a proud Aggie. So anybody who know me, they know I love to say Aggie Pride. And at that time, we were number 3 in the nation for the IT department. So I was in the IT and electronics department. And at that time, I did not have my college transcripts. They were in Columbia, South Carolina, in an attic. That's right. Columbia, South Carolina, in an attic. And it was just that I used to be the butt of all jokes. I worked at AT&T Wireless at the time. And I would tell people, I said, you know what? When I leave this job, they're going to pay me to travel, and they're going to pay me to go to college. And that's exactly what happened. And everybody would laugh and laugh. They was like, "That girl ain't that crazy. Ain't no way she gonna leave this job and call herself gonna get paid to go and pay to travel." And I said, to make it even better, because they had some guys that came in to from ECPI who would come in and fix the computers. I said, "You know, and I'm gonna teach that too." They said, "This girl is something wrong with her. She just don't know. Black, then she's going to get into IT, and she's working in customer service, and customer service, too, at that, you know, at the bottom of the barrel." But I had a dream and a vision that whatever God set before me, that I could have, because of the fact it belonged to him. And so if it belonged to God and I'm an heir or a child, then I should have access. And so the only thing I had to do is know the word and work it. And so I left there after giving birth to Larissa. And I think she might have been 4 weeks old, if that. And I had no money, had to borrow, I think, $39 so I could fill out the application. But lo and behold, I was on bed rest with her. I would go and volunteer inside of the communications department. So I worked with Mr. Bruce and from the Mass Comm at North Carolina A&T. On Saturdays, I would volunteer some time. And then I got the opportunity to meet Chancellor Rennick, as well as some of the trustees and the board of directors. And they thought I was a student, but they didn't realize I just lived down the road. And my husband at the time, he was in the engineering department. And so a lot of people thought that I was a student at North Carolina A&T, but I wasn't. Even when I was attending Benedict College, you know, they would allow me to check out books. And, you know, I even had like a little apartment across the road. But I didn't even live in North Carolina. You know, God just opened up a lot of different doors. All the security knew me. But people were very nice to me. So I think in January, I was still kind of recuperating from having my baby. And God said, "Get up. Go on campus. There's somebody I want you to meet." And so whenever I hear the voice of God, I always follow, even though it might be some crazy directions. And the only thing I had was a portfolio that belonged to my then husband and my resume. That it was, you know, just a little bit of stuff, because I worked in radio when I was at Benedict College. And even with working in radio, that was kind of funny, too, because I was actually reading somebody's mail when I was asked by Ms. Rutherford. And she was over career placement. And her son is actually, I believe, in the House of Representatives today. And she asked me, "What did I want to do?" And I remember sitting in Miss Ethel Taylor's class, and I told her, I said, "Well, you know, one day I'm going to work with you," because she had a radio show called Glory Train. And she just looked at me. But lo and behold, when Miss Rutherford asked me what I wanted to do, she made a telephone call to Mr. Alex Knight, and he was like, "Well, I'm going to interview you." And then there was a gentleman, and I call him, he was like a dad to me. You know, he mentored me greatly, Mr. Tony Jameson. I love, love, love him, because he would always keep me on the straight and narrow, and he would say different things to me, and he was like, Carney, know your environment. So I need everybody to understand here. What Tony Jameson was telling me has helped me even throughout my years, know your environment. And he was like the best boss in radio that I've ever had. So I'm getting ready to say back into volunteering at North Carolina A&T. So again, my degrees, transcripts, they were actually in the attic in Columbia, South Carolina. And it was my godparents' attic, matter of fact. And so I was like, I don't have anything. But I remember back in the day, God told me I had a seat with my name on it. And I just told him that. And then I started walking around campus. I was like, God, you said that there was somebody you wanted me to meet. And I was around the student union. And I was like, where is this person? And so I got directed to walk into this building. And so, again, I'm just crazy enough to follow directions. So I walked in the building. I met a Brigadier General, and I apologize, I forgot his name, but he was over the North Carolina STEM program, and they had like a bridging program where they wanted people who were underrepresented to go on and become a professor at a college. And so he gave me his business card, and I told him, I said, now look, sir, if you give me your business card, I promise you I'm going to call you. I don't know when I'm going to call you, but I'm going to call you. He said, don't worry about it. I got some money for you. I said, now, if you got some money for me, I'm going to call you today. And so, lo and behold, I gave him a call. He sent me an application. I sent it back. And then I was put into the North Carolina op-ed as a fellow at the time, I think, or either as an intern. I forgot which way it went. But they paid for my college education for me to get my master's degree. They paid for me to travel to meet Ross Perot. They had what was called I was studying forensics, computer forensics, but it was a STEM program, and nanotechnology. So I met him at a nanotechnology convention in 2006 in Dallas, Texas. And they were so gracious to send me, allow me to stop in South Carolina so I could pick up my children. And keep in mind, I was married at the time. I was also a mother and a stepmother at the time, too. But because I don't believe in calling my children stepchildren, all of my kids. So I picked, I think, two of them up. Yeah, I picked two of them up from South Carolina, came back to North Carolina, continued on. And then my mentor, Dr. Rollins, at one time, and how I met him was kind of funny, too, because I was actually in a church. Me and my then-husband said we was going to go look for another house, because we had a house down the road from North Carolina A&T, but we wanted, you know, maybe a bigger house or something, because that was just a starter at the point. So we were just driving around, and I just heard the voice of God say, stop in here at this church I've never been to before. And lo and behold, my mentor was there with his family. And before I went into the church, he was like, nah, I don't think that I can have you as an intern because of that, or a GTA, which is a graduate teaching assistant, because you have so much responsibilities. You have two kids at the house, plus you had your mother-in-law who was sickly, and you're in college. And this is something new to you, and that. And so that's just too much responsibility. So I said, you know what, I just need one chance. If you give me one chance, I promise you, I'm not going to fail you. I'll bet on me anytime. If it's something that I really want to do, I'm going to make a way, because my mother had taught me how to be a way maker. And so we got there. He left with his family early, and he said, well, come by my office. So I came by his office, and he gave me a key so I can, you know, open up and everything. And he said, I'm going to give you this one chance now. If you blow it, you blow it. I said, you ain't got to worry about it. I would be him to the college campus. I would wash my mother-in-law would make sure the kids has eaten, and make sure, you know, my then husband at the time was okay and off the work. And I would still be the college campus on time, early, he started allowing me to sit into his networking classes. And so I sat there and I listened, and then started allowing me to serve as a graduate teaching assistant. Now keep in mind, at that particular time, I was teaching or helping him with people who were smarter than me, people who knew technology more than I did. I knew how to operate boards from a TV and a radio perspective, but I didn't really understand how all of it worked. But I remember with Anthony Jameson, he told me, he said, whatever you do, you need to work with both of your hands and understand the computer and know your environment. So I made sure that whenever I was on the computer, what have you, I worked with both of my hands and understand whatever environment that I was in. And so that ended up being very successful. Then I got pregnant with my Olivia. And, I'm skipping to, while I was volunteering, I actually worked with Terrence J, because we had the same major and we were both Aggies. And we worked on this project for NASCAR where they were trying to get more people of color to get more involved with NASCAR. So we worked on some type of campaign and they were giving out scholarships. So he was teaching me how to operate the camera, and I'm eight months pregnant with Larissa, and I'm just wallowing and everything. And Mr. Bruce is like, "You okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm determined to learn what it is that I need to know. I'm determined to you know, make best use of the opportunity, because I was put in such a unique situation where I was allowed to learn, and basically learn for free, but also to pay my dues along the way, you know." And so we worked on that project together. We worked on, I think that was it. And then I also worked on ESPNU, which was the Eustis University. And that was kind of new at the time. So I was in the back, and I was in charge of the character machine. So I was in charge of that. And they would feed us for free. I mean, that's the first time whenever I had kielbasas. And I was like, oh my gosh, what are these sausages? I would see them in Sam's Club, but I would never get it because I was like, I've never had this before. Because keep in mind now, we grew up on Southside Sumter. So, you know, we just had the regular pork sausage or the red sausage and what have you. But this one was the kielbasa. And they were serving this, and, you know, wealthy people was eating this. I was like, I got to kind of understand how to eat this and everything. So that was unique to me, and I enjoyed that. But I enjoyed networking and speaking to different people, and for them to kind of invest in me, invest their time, invest their energy, and invest giving me lessons along the way and stories. And so I ended up saying to Dr. Derek Dunn, he was the dean at the time, I said, look, sir, I'm coming to you as humbly as I can. I have no money at the time. I just had a baby. And I need an opportunity. I said, if you just allow me just to come here, I promise you I'm going to get you my transcript. I'm going to get you my degree. I have it. I just don't have no proof that I had it. So he looked right into my eyes and he said, you know what? I'm going to give you a chance. I said, and not only do I have it, but also I've been volunteering. And see, volunteering go a long way. You know, I wasn't an intern per se. I was just somebody who lived down the road. I lived in the White Oak community. I had a house there. And was pregnant. I think I was 7 or 8 months pregnant. Volunteering my time while I was on bed rest, because it was something that I needed to do, something I needed to learn for my future endeavors. And so, he said, I'm going to give you a chance. So I believe on March 9th, I started school. And then maybe I had my aunt and uncle to send me my transcript as well as my degree. Then I think I got it like on the 13th, but I was already in school then. So, you know, all was well. But in this North Carolina Op-Ed program, the two things that they wanted you to do was to make sure that you're seeking out good opportunities so that you can understand what's going on, because was for underrepresented people. And you know, I'm a double minority. I'm a woman in technology. And then not only that, you know, I came from the wrong side of the tracks and graduated high school with a 1.9 GPA. Who does that? Who could believe that you could? And so was well. I was going to school. I did it hybridly, you know, online as well as face-to-face. And then when I got pregnant with Olivia, I was learning how to do Blackboard, because at that time I was as a GTA. So that's a graduate teaching assistant. And then I was also working on campus for something else. I forgot what it was, but I was an employee too. And so, or double employee. So I was doing that while I was pregnant. And then I was sitting in class and my favorite book, and then I talked about last week with someone else who had a book, was Leadership the Challenge. And North Carolina A&T, they just had a doctorate program, and I ended up meeting somebody who had a nonprofit. And I went to her graduation, and I said, you know, one day I'm going to get me a leadership degree. But that thought came in mind when I was in Dr. Ivory's class. And right now, I can't remember his name. I don't know why I can't remember his name, but I was in his class, and he asked anybody who was going to get their doctorate. Now, I got all this responsibility, a sick mother-in-law who had an amputated feet in my house, a newborn baby, and husband, another child, and I'm going to raise my hand, and I'm going to go get my doctorate. And I don't even think I had any money in my pocket at the time, but I just had a dream and desire, because I figured that God owned it, I could have it. But also what I failed to tell you is that while attending Waller Elementary School in Miss White class in 1987, I stated to them that I was going to become a doctor. And it was like, girl, you crazy. There's no way you can do this because you're on the wrong side of tracks. Your daddy worked in a grocery store. Your mama worked at the dry cleaners. Y'all don't really have no money. And you ain't smart enough. And I was like, but it belongs to God, so why can I not? So Luther Barnes and the Red Book Choir had this song, I'm Still Holding On. And I would sing that song all through this time that I was telling you about, that I'm still holding on. And the part that I want to stick with you is that they said I wouldn't make it. They said I wouldn't be here today. But I'm here, and I'm on my way. And I mean, that song was so prolific to me that I had no choice but to keep on holding on and keep on making, even though people were laughing at me, even my dad. He was like, I just can't believe you would say this. But I was like, I'm still holding on. I'm listening to the Red Book Choir. And even though all my colleagues, they laughed at me and said that I couldn't, I'm going to do this thing. And so I've been a butt of jokes for years. But I'm happy to say that in spite of everything, I made it. You know, I believe what God told me that I could have. I read it in the Word, and I believed it. And when times got tough, I would put my Bible on the floor, and I would stand on the Word, and I would recite it back to me, saying I'm more than a conqueror. Greater is He that's in me than he that's in the world. And that He promises to withhold no good thing from me. And that He's going to give me the desires of my heart. And I would repeat it back and forth and teach it to my children while they were inside my womb as well as on the outside of my womb. And then I got a divorce. And so I got a divorce. And I went back across the tracks. But also what they said is on the other end of the roadside town. And people, they picked at me because I came back home with kind of like my tail between my legs, because everybody told me, don't get mad at him, don't do it. But I mean, my grandma was like, when you go to college, you go get your lesson, go get your husband. So that was also in my ear. So I was like, okay. And while I was at Benedict College, I read this article by Oprah, and it was talking about how women who wanted to be someone, they had a choice to make. Either they was going to have their family or have their career. And I said, you know what, I'm going to have both. So this is what I'll do. I'll take some time off of school, and I'll develop my family, get married and everything. And that way, I can have both, best of both worlds. Well, it happened just a little bit. But again, I'm happily divorced. And I moved back on the other side. What a trailer. They said it was a crack house. And I said, you know what, I'm going to turn this into God's house. So I was, you know, be in the yard, planting, cutting the grass and praying and just thanking the Lord that we had a place to stay. And it had rust on the roof. That's right, y'all. I lived in a long trailer with rust on the roof with 3 to 4 kids at the time, because I also had a baby in between living there. And my then ex-husband, he picked at me. He's like, how could you leave your nice home with 30-foot ceilings and go and live in a place like this? I was like, it don't matter. You know, you can put me anywhere. As long as I got God and I got faith, because if anybody know me, I'm a woman of faith. I can believe the most craziest thing that God would tell me to do, and will do it. And don't even have to have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out, as they say. But I just believe God so heartily that if this is the right move for me to make, go ahead and make it. And so he picked and picked and picked. And thankfully, I paid off the home. And then we had the hurricane and the flood came in. But in the midst of that, as a single parent, of 3 kids, I gave birth to another child. I almost went into a coma because I was typing a paper while in the labor delivery room. And I'm like, I got to get this paper. And everybody knew I was pregnant and I was going to give birth, but I didn't want to not meet my deadline. And so I was like, I'm going to meet this deadline or what have you. I'm going to look good. Matter of fact, I started going in labor at the barbershop down the road. And it was like, you sure you're in labor? I said, look, I done did this so many times. I'm in labor by the night. I'm going to have this baby. And so every time I had a contraction, I would just raise my hand and say, hallelujah. And my barber at that time, he said, you sure you're in labor? I said, yeah, I'm in labor. I said, I'm going to have the baby, but you're going to get me right. Because every time I give birth, I have to have my makeup and have to have my hair done. I'm going to look pretty while I'm pushing. I don't care what happened. I'm going to look pretty while I'm pushing. If I have long hair, short hair, it don't even matter. You know, because I've had both while giving birth. And so later that day, I got rushed to the hospital and almost had her in the middle of the road. And so, but nevertheless, you know, my journey hasn't been glamorous. You know, there's a lot of mountains I had to climb, a lot of valleys I had to go through, a lot of people laughing and like, girl, go sit yourself down or what have you. You talking too big, you speaking too loud. And like last week, I actually had to work in a store that was across from the home I grew up from. And I called my dad and I said, well, I'm working across the street. I didn't want you to think I was being rude because I got like 8 stores I got to do. And I can't stop right now, but I just wanted to say hello so that you know that I'm not forgetting where I come from, but I got to get this work done because that's how I feed my family. And so he said, you know what? I remember when you was in elementary school and you told me that you was going to work for yourself. You ain't working for nobody. And I told your mom, I said, that girl right there crazy. Because ain't no way the white man going to let her have no business. And at that time, to keep in mind, that was the 80s. I'm talking that I'm going to have my own business. And I don't even know when I was talking here, I don't even know where I got that from. I was going to have my own business. The only thing I know, when I was growing up, my dad worked in the grocery store. He was a store manager. And then he became the produce manager. And my mom, her side hustle, she was a cosmetologist. So her side hustle was putting Jerry curls in the kitchen. Even though she was licensed, she worked at home. So she was the first female entrepreneur that I actually saw. I saw how she did it. So I said, you know, one day I'm going to do this. So, looking at that experience in the 80s and looking at now, you know, I always put my businesses where I have a little overhead because that's what I saw she did. And I have become a serial entrepreneur. You know, I like working with people. I don't like working for people. And there's a big difference. You know, I will work with anyone, love to collaborate, but I like to be a master of my own time. And being a serial entrepreneur gives you that opportunity. And a lot of times before people even see me, I have already gotten like 2 or 3 hours working. Like this morning, I was up at 1 o'clock, you know, 1 a.m., and then I went back to sleep, and then I woke back up. Everybody, you know, I wake up every morning between the hours of 3 and 3:30 for prayer. That's my prayer time. And I've been doing it for over 18 years, and just like clockwork. And then I go back to sleep and then go about my day if I can. Sometimes I'm on the road. But figure out where did I get that I was going to have a business. But I can also say that while I was at Benedict College, we had a writing class. And I said in my portfolio that I was going to have multiple businesses and I was going to get married to that then husband. I just changed my last name. And a lot of people don't realize that what you write, you can't become. Because in the book of Habakkuk, they talk about writing down a vision and letting an angel run with it. And shortly thereafter, we did get married. And then when I was ready to let Pharaoh go, I went to the book of Exodus. And I said, Pharaoh, let your people go. And I got my divorce. So, you know, you can use the word for good, bad, and indifferent. But I know that as for me, I can believe God. You know, if he puts something in my heart to do, I'll do it. But overall, even in all my businesses, all of his ministry, you know, I tell my son often, even though I might have a doctorate degree in educational leadership, because I did end up getting a degree in leadership because I first saw it in North Carolina A&T, Aggie Pride, that I'm a glorified housekeeper. Because when you look at the things that I do, I fix people's lives through technology, through holistic healing, through being a great parent, because I'm a certified parent instructor. I have certifications, you know. Any table you put me at, chances are I got a certification somewhere in it, or I have some type of experience in it. But one of the things I focus on is that I always want people to leave me better than the way I came. I always want to be invited to the table. I won't go ahead and invite myself. And I love people, and I want it to show. I always want to just concentrate on things that I love. You know, I love building stronger families, and I do that through technology. I do that through parenting. I do that through community service. But not only that, my family and I, we do a lot of community service, you know, in the background of things. So you may not see us publicly doing a lot of stuff, but behind the scenes, we get it done. You know, that's one of the things that I loved about Benedict College, because at the time, the motto was be a power for good. And they made everybody do service learning hours. I think you had to do 200 service learning hours. But by the time I graduated, I had 480 service learning hours. And I took that into my home because the Bible says that too much is given, much is required. And so you can't expect to have if you don't expect to give. But it also tells you to never despise the day of small beginnings. And I remember my Uncle Tony, I love my Uncle Tony. That's like my favorite uncle on my dad's side. Because of the fact that he was always there for me, but not only that, for my children. But he made me not to forget that no matter how small you start, keep going and don't discredit it. You know, I can say that I started my technology company with $35 in a dream. And I remember my son, Daniel, he was so disgusted with me in fifth grade. And he was like, Mama, why don't you just go ahead and work for somebody? Because this is poor. This is no money. But don't you know, my kids never went hungry. All the bills was paid. And clothes was on their back. Matter of fact, this lady who I've never met before, and I would love to have the honor to give her a hug, she would send my kids name brand clothes from Louisiana because she knew somebody who knew me that was already clean and ironed and would mail them to me. And so I've had a lot of great people along the way that has helped, even with LC Childcare, who took care of my kids while I was in school. I even had a nanny, because I looked at the housewives of Atlanta, and excuse what I say, but I said, you know, she had a big daddy, and she's sleeping with a married man. So if I live upright, and I believe in God, and I believe he take care of me, I can have this too. So as crazy as it sounds, I said, you know, I'm going to get me a nanny. And I think like 3 days later, I ended up having one and had no job. Only made $35. And so God has been really, really good to me. I've seen a lot of miracles along the way. And I can honestly say I did not get to this place that I'm at now by myself. And I call out these people names because they have been very instrumental to me. They have been a way maker. They have been a bridge over troubled water. You know, they have helped me in many, many ways and been behind the scenes. You know, they didn't ask me to say, okay, well, you helped. I need you to call my name and say this, that, and the third. Mm-mm, they just did what they did. And one of the things I learned from each and every one of these persons that whose name I called out is that you got to be a community helper. You know, not only you being a community helper, but you got to pull somebody else up along the way. Because one thing my grandmother would tell me, and her name is Rosalie Wells, when I was 17 years old, she said that, because I was getting ready to do something wrong, and I'll never forget this, I was in her kitchen, and she said, even a dog deserves some respect. And she also told me on that very same day, she said, you can do a lot with a little, and a little with a lot. So oftentimes I tell people, you know, use what you got, because the Bible asks you what you got in your house. And so that's one of my motivations right there. What do I have in my house? And so I look at it, and then just go from there. But it takes a lot of people to be able to help you become who you are. You cannot do it on your own. There's no such thing as self-made. I'm not a self-made doctor. I'm not a self-made anything. You know, I will tell you that, again, I can believe some things that are very crazy. And one of the things I didn't tell you, that you can actually follow me on Instagram. You can follow, you can see my school. I have a private home school that's STEAM certified in South Carolina. And the name of that is the SPI Academy. And everybody like, that look like the word spy, but it really doesn't stand for that. It stands for STEAM, Performance, and Inquiry. Because one of the things that I wanted my students to do that's within my home, because I look at them in terms of not only my children, but my students, that you have to think and think for yourself. So you have to start asking questions. So that's why the I is there for the inquiry. But with the STEAM, if you look at a lot of different things you do, like I was a licensed hair braider, and I'm also one of the cosmetology teachers in the state of South Carolina that you can come to me for any continuing education classes. And so that's STEAM right there. You know, being a barber, that's STEAM. Cosmetology, that's STEAM. But a lot of people may not think about it. You know, STEAM stands for science, technology, engineering, arts. You know, I have a daughter who sings very good. I mean, that girl could blow. And mathematics. And so art, you know, Queen Sunny and I, we attended a liberal arts school, which was Benedict College. And that's STEAM. But you just have to know what you're looking at and how. You know, I think STEAM has afforded me a lot of great opportunities, because even in my holistic practice, you know, one of the persons I think I need to also, I know I need to mention, she is an Aggie, and when I was in her class at Bates Middle School, she made everyone fill out a college application to North Carolina A&T, and I still have the application from 1993 in my parents' home, and I graduated from North Carolina A&T in 2007, but it all started with a seed that was planted by Miss Jacqueline June, that goes by Gleason now. You know, had it not been for her along the way, and my kids, they love her. You know, I always make sure that I have a love offering in terms of a hug or what have you for her, because she taught me my periodic table. You know, I still know that periodic table from 1993. I still know that she said, you know, you had to unload your overload when you had gum and candy in your mouth. You know, her and Dr. Bird was very prolific in my educational life. Not only that, Ms. Rose Marie Copley, you know, I hate math, but that don't mean I can't do it. You know, I have to be able to do it in order to have businesses and to be a serial entrepreneur. But sometimes when people hear that, they think I can't add in and subtract and multiply and divide. I can do that really quickly. But if it's not pertaining to my money and my household, I'm not. Because to me, that's just a waste of time. I don't want to do, you know, algebra when it's not necessary and I can do something easy. But nevertheless, Miss Rosemary Coakley, when I was 14 years old at something high school in ninth grade, she would say, love this, love that, because I was a little bully at the time, I think. And, you know, I was just trying to be big and bad because I grew up on Southside Stump. And she's like, love, you need to stop this love. You need to stop that. And because of the fact she emphasized love and redirected my badness or my terrible, stubborn ways and made me write commercials for the radio. That's what I forgot to tell you. You know, it started with a scene in high school with Miss Rosemary Coakley when I was taking her ABC class, Applied Basic Math class. And we had word problems. I hated word problems. And she's like, well, we have to do something so that you can become interested. So I would write poetry. And Mr. King from Bates Middle School, he was an art teacher. So I would write poetry in both of their classes so that I could be interested in what they were teaching me and excel at it. And because of the poetry and the commercials, you know, and I still have that book of commercials I wrote. Matter of fact, I think my first one was King Save-A-Ho, and that was just something crazy that I wrote so that I could understand what was going on, and I still have that to this day. But one of the things that encouraged me to become an author was third grade in Miss Fryerson class when there was a poetry contest, and we had to do soliloquies, I believe. And then I met Miss, and I think I was in her third grade class, and then my fifth grade Miss Stutz class, she had us to write a book, which I still have. And I have all of my colleagues that went to elementary school, even, you remember Elizabeth Kennedy? I still have her poem in there. Emma Good, Tamika James. I think I might even have yours in there. I have to check. And we actually wrote a book out of cardboard, duct tape, wallpaper and borders, and I had that in my closet right now. So that was my very first book, and so now I think I'm an author of about 15 different books. And so it depends on what you want to know. You know, I have them written under Dr. Quanique Waltz, I have them written under Emma's daughter, and then my son, he's an author of two books. And he's gotten 6 awards for his very first book. So his books are The Spiritual DNA of God, which was derived from going to a Bible study that my cousin had at his church. And he was talking about the spiritual DNA of God. And they didn't realize he was listening and that he actually understood it. And when I read that book, it made me cry because I was like, oh, this boy, he learned something. He learned something in the house. Because keep in mind, I would teach my kids the word while they were inside my womb, as well as when they came out, especially when they was potty training. You know, that was a session for me to teach them the words that they had to stand on. And so I would always say, you know, you're going to be my bishop one day. And so his book, Mama Used to Say, Before My Teenage Years, he wrote that one and received 6 awards for it in South Carolina, in Aiken, South Carolina, and in other places as well. And so now he's a Marine. He just went in about 2 weeks ago. And so, and he graduated at 17 years old. He would have graduated at 16, but because of the virus, you know, we didn't want to be insensitive, and we had to see what the direction was and how to really proceed. But I remember telling people I was going to also have my own school. And, you know, I went to meetings so I could learn how to do a charter school, a magnet school, this, that, and the third, and worked as a teacher assistant. And so, you know, God put me in a low position at the time, but a very high position, too, because I was able to learn some of the things along the way while I served as vice president of the PTA. And, I mean, it's like, okay, I go from being a college professor to being a teacher aide because I need to learn how K-12 operated from a hands-on point of view. And I was in school, so I had to have an internship. So I did that. And so that's how I see classes. I've also had students from all over the world because I tutor as well. And so I've had people who are directors of hospitals that I've helped to write their book. To get tutoring from, They got tutoring from me, people who work for the VA, any industry that you can think of, I've been in it, you know. I installed computers, even in Sumter County, you know, Sumter County computers, in Aiken, in Augusta, military bases, any place in convenience stores, big box retailers, especially the self-checkouts. I've installed those, hardware stores, school districts for Columbia, Richland 1 and 2, different places I've been in to do different things. So, you know, I thank God that he afforded me opportunity to meet a lot of great people and open up a lot of doors that they said this Southside something girl couldn't do, or couldn't have as a 1.9 GPA. And I learned some things along the way too, because the lady who sold me the trailer that had the rust on it, she only had a sixth grade education. And I can say this now, I think, you know, she was a wealthy woman. She gave me an opportunity, but the seed started from my mother. My mother gave her a ride to a cosmetologist, continuing education class, because she was also a cosmetologist in Sumter, South Carolina. And she gave me an opportunity, and I couldn't believe she rode in my car, and it just made me feel so good that she would allow me to purchase that trailer. Because I think at the time I probably didn't have any money either, but maybe like 2 weeks later I ended up getting it. And so at one time when I called about it, she was like, no, I think you've been living a little bit too high on the hog. You ain't gonna want this right here. And I was like, well, you know, you can put me any place and I'll make it into a home. You know, if I'm not looking at the outside, I'm looking at the inside, and I'm looking at how I can transform it into something better, you know. And keep in mind, it talks about seeds. So I like leaving people, places, and things better than where I first came. You know, so I thank God for that opportunity. You know, she's deceased. I made sure that I attended her funeral as a way of giving her honor and thanks for just taking a chance on me. And she told me, she said, keep this letter so that everybody know that even though you had these kids, you paid your bills on time. And if you couldn't, you wrote me a letter and you told me. And she's like, I can deal with someone like you. And see, based upon where we grew up from, people look at you in your eye, and they can tell if you're an upright person, if you're a trustworthy person. And they will give you an opportunity. And something my grandmother told me, Ms. Rosalie Wells, she said, look, if people see you trying, they will help you. Only thing you got to do is try. If you try, God would make sure that you're in position talking to the right person in the right place at the right time. So, you know, that's one of my daily prayers, is that my angels get sent out before me and direct my paths. And even if I have to move and go another direction, you know, let me be willing and able. Because not everybody is willing, not everybody is able. And so you can also follow me on Facebook too. I'm there, but I'm under right now another name. So I posted, one of the things I like about me is that I'm very adaptable. You know, it don't matter where you put me, you can, there could be seats of many people of royalty. There could be seats of many people who are poor. There could be seats of many people who I don't know. I just want to sit on the floor. I can sit on the floor and still be happy, content in any situation because of the fact of at least there's a place for me. You know, I don't have to have the best, even though I like that, like quality stuff, don't get me wrong. But I grew up on Southside something. And not only that, the reason why I know my Bible so well is because of the alcoholics in Southside Sumter. You know, my uncle, he ran when he was living a bootleg house. But he also told me was that no matter what I was doing in life, even if I was a broom sweeper, to be the best broom sweeper there was. And a lot of people in this community have a lot of respect for him. If I mention his name, they're like, yeah, I remember the boys, you know, because they were good to a lot of people. And so I can honestly say that the people who are drunks and alcoholics, they have been very good to me. You know, they helped me along the way. And I remember going to Benedict College and standing on library steps, and I had my hand on my Kindle, and I was thinking, where are all the about that, because on Sundays, my grandfather, who I affectionately say the heathen whenever I'm speaking about him on my television, on my TV show, on YouTube, if you go to Aunt Mary's Niece, I talk about him, and he taught me about love. He taught me about loving people for who they were, not what they had. But on Sundays, and even on other days, all of the drunks in the community would come to his house. They would clean up the yard. My grandmother would cook dinner. And if they wanted to take a shower, they could. They was always welcome. And they just became part of the family, you know. My grandparents, they was off of Broad Street. So that's what I grew up knowing, is people have different backgrounds. People have different experiences, but don't look at or look down on a person. Always look up and see what you can do to kind of help them along the way and hear their story. You know, had it not been for them, especially the people who were janitors and cafeteria workers at Bates Middle School, at Waller Elementary. Matter of fact, my godmother, she was a custodian worker, one of them, at Waller Elementary. She used to always share with me her sausage sandwich. And then when I got older and came back, my kids had an opportunity to meet her. And even in church, even when she went briefly to a nursing home, she still was sharing her food with me. I said, goodness, it started off from a little seed, you know. So never discount what you can do for a person, because even a hug, a smile, a gentle, kind word can help them along the way. And because of these people who have helped me, they have instilled good values, good morals, gave me a moral compass, you know. Even I can say that I had somebody who was a crackhead work for me in North Carolina, and I promised them as long as they do good work, they will always have a job. Because sometimes it's not the textbook knowledge that will help. Because there are some people who can pass things that have very good grades, but they can't do the work. There's some people who have some certifications, and they can't do the work. So you have to look at the quality of the person and the quality that they bring to the table. Like, I also have an uncle who they like to say is a crackhead, but to me, he's everything. You know, I love talking to him because he's brilliant. And he might have that that situation. He doesn't live in South Carolina. But he might have that situation. I don't really care because he's always been good to me and mine, you know. And I like one of the expressions he said to me once. He said, you know, I don't care what they say about you. I said, well, what do they say about me? And that was so hilarious to me. And that was over 5 years ago. But I promise you, I love, 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 love talking to him because that man is smart, very smart. And just like a man who just got hit on the day after Thanksgiving by a car, he suffered from schizophrenia. He actually helped me to see things from a different perspective as I was writing books. And I would just go buy him cigarettes, and he would give me knowledge. But I would never thought about that had it not been for Tennessee, you know, from Arrested Development, the song, and from my past experiences growing up at my uncle's house, who ran the bootleg, you know. So I've seen a lot of different things along the way, and I love those people because of those people I am today, you know.
Yes, thank you. And because of that, you are my people.
Exactly.
Quanique, I want to thank you for coming on the show today and invite you to come back out, because we need to do another segment on the business edition. I thank you so much. Yes. So for
thank you, everybody.
Yes, anytime. And we're going to do many, many more. Guys, make sure you hit up her online. I'm going to put in her contact information down there below. We have taken a journey. You have seen where I've come from. And that's right. Right here with Queen Sunny Honey every Freedom Friday, giving you solutions, bringing you business people, boss ladies, single mother, married woman, always with some solution to inspire you and empower you. Until next time, people, remember that device that you're holding, yes, same thing that every powerful person uses to run their company. Get about your business, and remember, limitless blessings to you and yours. Until next time, Dubai bye, boo.